once more into the breach, dear friend.
Now let's close the wall up with our English dead.
And here we are, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, with another exciting second hour of The Personal Wealth Coach, starring Jeff and...
Jake.
McClure. You didn't say McClure.
I didn't say McClure.
Why didn't you say McClure?
I did.
Starring Jeff and...
Jake.
Boy, you are really good. Look, we cannot proceed.
All right, let's go back. All right.
Once more under the breach, dear friend.
Let's close the wall up with our English dead.
And here we are, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, with another exciting second hour of The Personal Wealth Coach, starring Jeff and...
Jake.
McClure. You are...
Very good.
Your timing's still not...
Sometimes I have trouble saying my name.
Obviously. Well, you've had a change in personality recently, so... You've had a personality shift and an identity theft shift. Something. Anyway, you are listening to The Personal Wealth Coach. Telephone number's in here, 773-1400 if you're in East Bell County. Otherwise,
1-866-597-1400 anywhere else.
And this broadcast is on Saturday, February 7th, so if it's a different date where you are, you're going to have trouble calling. Although I did talk to a guy yesterday via FaceTime in Japan. And it was exceptionally weird because he had to end the conversation because he had to fix breakfast for his kids for Saturday morning.
Okay.
And I was talking to him yesterday, which is like Friday. And he wouldn't tell me how the stock market closed, what level it closed at. He said that would be, he couldn't tell me that.
Illegal. He's a day early. That'd be insider information.
Yeah. Well, it's actually outsider information. Way the heck outsider information, you know. But he just wouldn't tell me, you know. And anyway, weirdness abounds. I was personally...
Mostly us. Mostly us is the weirdness.
Mostly, I mean, I was FaceTiming, which is something you do on a telephone, on my computer. And so you do it on a computer, too. And I did it through his email address, which was a Hotmail email address, so there were no long-distance charges for me to discuss, to talk to him for an hour in Japan via video. And I feel like I'm living in a science fiction magazine. Anyway, what I wanted to talk about, which has to do with something that is a little bit frightening, and it was buried deep in the Wall Street Journal, is there's a General Hodges, a Lieutenant General Hodges, who is the commander of U.S. forces in Europe, who was interviewed, and the Wall Street Journal carried his interview in their Saturday paper somewhere. I take the electronic version, the digital version. And he made a statement that I'm quite comfortable was cleared through higher authority than him before he did it, because Lieutenant Generals don't do interviews and say things without clearing it. He said that the Russians are in the midst of a military buildup in such a manner that it is very clear to him that they expect a war within the next several years.
The Russians do.
The Russians they wouldn't be expending that much money on their they expect a ground war, T-80 tanks, aircraft, sophisticated anti-aircraft weapon systems.
Well, they're using them right now in Ukraine.
But they're building them at a much higher rate of speed than could be accounted for unless they expected a major war within about 5 years. And he said it's pretty clear to him that sometime, and I saw a different number, I don't remember the exact numbers there, whether he said 3 to 5 or 3 to 7 years. But the bottom line to it is Russia is preparing to go to war. They have sophisticated weapon systems. And he also pointed out something else. A lot of those sophisticated weapon systems, very sophisticated weapon systems, including the tanks and the anti-aircraft systems that require extensive training and very high levels of discipline to operate, are in Ukraine.
Yeah. Well, this is a fascinating area.
Meanwhile,
the government of Russia has what's called a sovereign fund. You know about this, but... Mm-hmm. And they have a very large sovereign fund. Basically, they've made a lot of money with oil and gas over the past 5 or 6 years or so. They also wanted to remove the possibility of a really nasty downturn. So they've been socking away this money. Well, now they look around and they realize that the sources of income that they had, most of it was from oil revenue. Lots and lots of taxes came to the government of Russia from oil revenue. Well, now the price has dropped, and it doesn't look like it's going to come back up anytime soon. So they're, you know, anybody that's been watching their rainy day fund, that's kind of what they're calling it, has been watching it shrink dramatically. They've been using it for purchasing of food and for keeping goodwill going in Russia, but also for military. There is a timeline associated with that. It's like a ticking time bomb. You can watch as that number goes down, that sovereign fund gets smaller and smaller. Yeah. It's not going to get to zero before Putin does something.
And the number, I found the number here, said General Hodges, Ben Hodges, Frederick B. Hodges, said that, quote, "I believe the Russians are mobilizing right now for a war they think is going to happen in 5 or 6 years. Not that they're going to start a war in 5 or 6 years, but I think they're anticipating that things are going to happen and that they will be in a war of some sort, of some scale, with somebody within the next 5 to 6 years.
Well, what they're seeing in Ukraine is a great example. If the economy of Russia totally fails, and I think at this point, again, it's a matter of time. They've got some plank bridges set up over a really nasty divide, but it's not going to last forever. Unless the price of oil comes right back up and then they're in the same boat as Saudi Arabia and everybody else that's depending on that as their total income, only it's more expensive for them than Saudi Arabia. They will be in a place where if their economy goes away, what happened in Ukraine is feasible to happen across all of Russia, where Russia has, I don't know, 17 different languages spoken in the country of Russia, somewhere around there. They have very, very distinct groups of people that are being held together by one government. And it's very much like what the Soviet Union was. It's still the largest nation on the planet. It's bigger than Australia, and Australia is its own continent. This place is huge. The idea that Putin, who was shamed by the fall of the Soviet Union, would not be prepared to keep Russia from falling apart is kind of ludicrous.
Well, General Hodges also said something back to what you said, the fact that Mariupol, the town in...
Mariupol, yes.
In, Mariupol, whatever,
yeah,
that is.
Mariupol.
Mariupol.
That's in Ukraine, eastern
it's
Ukraine.
It's very clear to him that they are going to take the rest of eastern Ukraine. Yeah, I don't know if you know what Merkel did. She proposed a peace plan to Russia.
And they got up and left.
But the point is, the peace plan that she is currently proposing to them basically involves splitting off eastern Ukraine and giving it to Russia.
We, as a country, are not allowed to authorize that. We're not allowed to say yes to that. The Germans generally aren't either, but they didn't sign that treaty with Ukraine saying that we would honor their borders.
Well, the reason I bring this up is if you go back to the early stages of World War II,
right,
and you take Merkel, who has said very clearly, I do not believe that there's a military solution to this,
right.
And by the way, Joseph Biden also said,
yeah, he just
same
said
thing.
That this
he
weekend.
Said there is no military. The Russians think there is a military solution to it.
And they think it's an easy solution.
And
you just take it.
The parallels here between the beginning, the pre-World War II situation where the Wehrmacht was moving into a country or an area or somebody, parts of Czechoslovakia, of what it would later Yugoslavia, the Sudetenland, and so on. And they were effectively occupying it. And then Neville Chamberlain would go and negotiate with Hitler.
Peace, 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 guys,
and
peace.
Basically turn over a piece of Europe, a piece of somebody else's country.
Right. Well, we're okay if you take a little piece of this and a little piece of that. Just don't take a piece of us.
This is one of the things I went back and looked. And what was very consistent about both the French and the British during this period of time as they were discussing this with Hitler is they didn't say there's no military solution. They said war is not a solution to
this.
Which is the same thing the parallels here are mind-boggling. Meanwhile, General Hodges, in his interview, was stating that sequestration... I remember who did sequestration.
Yeah.
Sequestration is in danger of preventing the 30,000 troops. We only have 30,000 troops left in Europe.
Right.
From being able to effectively defend themselves. He's concerned about a hollow army that is insufficiently trained and insufficiently equipped, while the Russians at the same time
are bulking
up, building up their armed forces and moving into Europe. And, man, anyone who's read history, and I think I'm one of five people in the country who have.
Why would you read that? There's comic books.
This is such a similar situation as we had going into World War II. Only Merkel is playing Chamberlain.
Yeah, you know, I spoke this last week with you about this and on the air about Mariupol. Mariupol is right there on the north shore of the Black Sea. Basically, Crimea sticks way out into the Black Sea, but Russia doesn't have a land pathway to Crimea. They have to cross a ferry. Well, last week, Putin announced that they're going to build a $2 billion bridge where that ferry is. And the person, obviously, who's doing it is a friend of Putin, because that's how he keeps the rich people in line, is he gives them nice things like this. One of the people that's specifically targeted by the sanctions from the United States and Europe is one of the people that's going about to get $2 billion worth of funding to build this bridge. And at the same time, they're attacking Mariupol, which is basically, if you follow the road that goes from Russia down to Crimea that isn't on the ferry, it goes through Mariupol, and then it comes around and heads south into Crimea. Well, if the Russians get serious about this, they're kind of half serious about it now. They're doing it in increments.
I think they're very serious.
Well, they're doing it timed because they haven't pushed up north from Crimea, and they have that ability. But they have been going across into eastern Ukraine with real Russian troops.
But they're pretending like they're not Russian troops. Matter of fact, General Hodges showed where he could strip.
Little green men.
Where he could literally, on his uniform, he could strip all of the badges and everything off of his uniform because they're all Velcro.
Velcro now. Yeah, same with Russians.
And that he was simply saying that it's Russians that are doing this. And he said now, and the issue is, of course, if they came out of Crimea, that would be clearly Russian troops, as opposed to they wouldn't be able to maintain the fiction that Ukrainians.
They can't really maintain. They really can't maintain it now. If you just look,
they're doing it though.
They're trying. Well, they're doing it the same way they did with Crimea, which is to say, those aren't our people until it's our land. Now it's they're our people. They were just volunteers. That's what they're saying about the Russian troops in Ukraine right now, eastern Ukraine.
By the way,
they're just volunteers. But when they die, they're given full military funerals that Putin speaks at in the public view, where he says that.
The news media continues to report that his claim that there are no Russian troops involved.
Right, and they give it the same weight as anybody else.
Yeah, and very frankly, people have asked us again and again and again, what is there to be afraid of if you're an investor in the market?
Russia.
I'm going to tell you, in the short term, this is why we advocate people having a good cash and short-term bond position. In the short term, Europe looks very, very unstable. And not only is it weak and unstable from an economics point of view, but in the real world, when you have a weak and unstable alliance, sooner or later some aggressor will begin to move in and take advantage of that. And Jake's pointed out something that if you want something to be concerned about, and it's not something, and there's a proper method of dealing with this, but if you want something to be concerned about, it is the fact that Europe continues to be unstable and slide downhill economically, while Russia, as Jake just said, has got a clock ticking before they run out of money, and they're not putting their money into doing something that would make them economically more healthy. They're doing something that would make Putin more popular among Russians, and very frankly, history states very clearly. Same thing happened in Germany. in the Depression. You spend a lot of money on military, you employ a lot of people, you raise the morale, but at some point you have to go take somebody else's stuff to pay for it, or the whole thing falls apart. And I think taking somebody else's stuff is on his agenda.
Yeah, well, we just got an email from Lynn Woolley.
Yeah, I saw that.
He said he agrees with us. That was his first line, which is always great.
A little scary, but a great.
Yeah. And he said that Putin's fighting a sinking economy and so on. So he follows that and he says, is Obama going to be, basically, is he, Obama's unlikely to challenge him. What's the deal? Should he do it before we elect a new president, since Obama is unlikely to challenge him? Okay. I think the timeline that Putin is following, and if you just look at his actions, doesn't have a whole lot to do with the United States. There's some right. degree of movement there, but I don't care if it was George W. Bush. If you recall, Georgia was invaded. Well, George mm-hmm. W. Bush was on in the seat, and he's a... I mean, by any stretch, a hawkish person. He started two wars with good cause at the time. The fact that he did not turn around and help the Georgians, who were part and are part of our actions in both Afghanistan and Iraq. Georgians sent troops to help us as part of an alliance. They wanted to be part of NATO. South Ossetia belongs to Russia now, and we haven't done anything about it because we can't. We cannot reach that part of the world very easily. We've got great ocean power. We've got ocean power that makes the height of the British Empire look weak. And because our aircraft carrier fleets can touch huge areas anywhere around oceans, but the Black Sea does not belong to us. The Black Sea is owned by Russia, and that's what's going on here. They are fighting a battle over the Black Sea. NATO owns the south side of the Black Sea and part of the west side of the Black Sea.
Yeah, through Turkey.
Through Turkey. Russia does not want its warm water ports surrounded by NATO. It doesn't want it. So whether or not he can afford it is irrelevant, because he can begin an invasion and take assets from the invaded place.
Right, he's past the point. There's an article in the... He's past the point of whether he can afford it.
Right, he's in it. To get out would cost a lot.
Right, it is... And there's an article in the Financial Times in England, and it really cuts to the chase here, where the writer says, is this a failing... Is Russia a failing democracy, or is it a succeeding... autocracy. And the point is that Putin is becoming more and more and more. I would not be at all surprised to find that a crisis, as he approaches the end of whatever his elected term is, I would not be in the least surprised for there to be a crisis where he has to use the armed forces, in which he declares a state of emergency and leaves himself with dictatorial powers.
Right.
And this is the funny thing. If he manages that correctly, and that's, by the way, one of the reasons we have to be, it's one of the reasons that the Western powers are so cautious about confronting him, is he wants a confrontation at the very end of our logistics ability. In other words, our logistics would be so strained to get close to Russia to where we could fight the Russians in, for instance, Ukraine, even if we wanted to, that we couldn't defeat them. In matter of fact, there's a parallel here with World War One. The Allies in World War One did not have the capability, simply did not have the capability logistically or militarily to invade and occupy Germany, which is why the war stalemated. We couldn't move forward. They couldn't move forward. Everybody just kept piling people in, and Germany eventually went bankrupt. And the parallels here, again, are pretty astonishing. I'm not smart enough. I'm not the president. I'm not a leader in Congress. But meanwhile, in Congress, our House of Representatives right. is divided and throwing brickbats at each other. I don't yeah. know if you saw the Texas and yeah. the...
I haven't seen that. I want to see it. But Lynn lastly put in sequester as part of it. Wasn't that Obama's idea? And I have to go back and say, we have a short memory. All of us do. Sequestration happened in 2013. And particularly when we're down in the nitty-gritty of the trenches, it's easy to forget what happened. Nobody wanted sequestration. The Republicans and the Democrats got together, and it was the Budget Control Act that basically said, if you guys don't come up with an idea to cut the budget, then these draconian cuts are going to happen, and it's going to be, regardless of where they happen, it'll be 50% from defense, 50% from discretionary spending, yeah. period, across the board. The super committee was put together. The super committee was, people are remembering this now, I'm sure, put together with these senators, and they couldn't agree. We couldn't get past gridlock. And what it's done at this point is it's cut defense spending. We have lowered the number of boots on the ground yeah. in Europe at a point when Russia is gearing up for war. It wasn't a Democrat plot or a Republican plot. It was an incompetent plot by the United States government that couldn't make up its mind one way or the other. And so we've got a unilateral agreement across our government to cut spending in defense as well as other areas. Yeah. And
unfortunately,
we're the only people capable of stopping Russia if they invade Europe.
And we
Germany
only,
cannot.
And we only have 30,000 troops on the ground.
Right. And that's not going to do it.
No. And it's...
If they're gearing up for war...
And the other thing is, and the Democrats obviously would love to cut the defense budget further.
Yeah.
That was their idea.
But obviously.
The Republicans want a lowered deficit.
Yeah. Also
and no
good
increases
idea.
In taxes.
Yeah. I mean, I'll throw it all together and you
but,
have...
But the point is, if you're going to increase defense spending, you need to increase taxes to pay for
correct.
It.
Correct. Yeah. And we need to figure out how we pay for things before we do it. That's part of the whole deal. If you increase taxes or if you change... I mean, this...
By the way, again, we're back in the...
Quagmire.
We're back in the 1920s. And... In the late 1930s, in the late 1920s and in the late 1930s, is a big move by Congress to cut spending. And they cut it heavily in defense at the same time that the world was becoming a more dangerous place.
Right.
Do we love to repeat history or what?
Know, what's funny is that the cause and effect here is unknown. We don't know if the world becomes a more dangerous place because we defense... cut, or if we defense cut right as the world is becoming more dangerous. It's impossible to tell because it only happens one way. If we could have options on history, it would be nice, but that's not the way it works.
Yeah. Well, we do have some commercials to play. You are listening to the Personal Wealth Coach, and the telephone number is near 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400.
That's all dependent on whether today is Saturday, February the 7th, where you are. And if it is, then you're welcome to give us a call after these important words from Times Square's sponsors. And we're back with more of the Personal Wealth Coach with Jeff and
Jake McClure.
And I think it's important as we roll into the second half of the second hour, 2-2 on 2-7. I like numbers. That we say what to do about some of these things. There's some, you know, we could go on and on about some things that are scary. There's always something scary, which, by the way, means we're in a bull market. We are, by the way, in a bull market. Both something really weird happened. The Office of Management and Budget and mm-hmm. the Congressional Budget Office
right.
agreed on what's happening in the economy. That's scary.
That's a little strange. They're probably wrong.
Well, hey, actually...
The agreement in the government's not necessarily a
there's
good thing.
There's an across-the-board agreement that the economy is improving pretty steadily. Oh. They look at the underlying trends.
Hit people hard with a frozen trout, and when they say, oh, something cold and wet hit my face...
Yes.
That's what's happening here.
But they're also... concurrent in believing that in 2016 we will see the unemployment rate down around 5% and the economy kicking along at the best it's been in many, many years, and a very, very healthy economy, which means, by the way, by definition, relatively healthy earnings.
In this case, I think they're actually right. Mm-hmm. How's that for a weird?
But at the same time, for investors, it's very, very important to recognize that at some point along the way, there is going to be something that just scares the fiddles out of everybody.
Well, there's a pretty good one coming up. The Fed is likely to raise interest rates this year. Very likely to happen in June.
I would say that I would be extremely surprised if they didn't raise interest rates at some point this year.
I don't expect mortgage rates to stay down in the 3% range for the rest of the year. I believe that is...
I thought you were going to say forever.
Not forever, nor for the rest of the year. Mm-hmm. I think that this is one of those moments in history that people are not getting their mortgages refinanced because they think
rates will be lower?
Rates will be lower, and this is the point where it doesn't get much lower.
Now, I will say that the United States economy is healthy. And again, I want to emphasize, there's going to be some short-term bumps. I don't know what they're going to be, but I can say with a great deal of faith, for instance, in as short as a couple of weeks, Greece could literally default.
Yep.
And go out of the Eurozone.
Defaulted before. They just did it in a structured way.
Where they just simply say, we're not paying anymore. If the Germans don't back down on this and the Greeks don't back down on it, the Greeks will go to the drachma. And frankly, they're reaching the point in Greece, since probably a majority of the people in Greece believe they're going to do this at this point, that they probably will. I certainly hope that they don't, because it will cause some economic disruptions. Now, so what's the solution here? And this is the point I want to make out. Not to bail out of the market.
No.
Not to try to market time. And certainly, when the market takes a dip, which it will do, not to bail out at that point. But rather to make sure that if you're drawing on your portfolio, and I've said this before, if you're drawing on your portfolio, make sure you have enough corn in the silo, to use a metaphor, to have enough ability to go for 18 months or so on short-term cash or short-term bond positions. This is an important thing, because in the midst of this growth that's almost certainly going to go on for the next couple of years at least, we're going to almost certainly see some severe, scary setbacks. Big emphasis I want to point out here. Let's just say that Russia in the next few years does what they anticipate doing, and they move into Europe someplace, and there's a war cranks up and defense spending picks up in the United States. All this stuff happening at the same time. The Europeans are simply not in a position to do anything about it. It'll scare people. The market will drop. But think long term. What does that do for the economy and for earnings? And I hate to say this, but in the short term at least, war is really, really good for the economy.
Long term, okay? It's not good. Short term, it's really good.
And the end result is just a warning to investors, and this is the kind of thing we need to give you, is don't bail out when the market tanks, because the economy...
That's when you bail in.
That's the economy of the United States is astonishingly strong, and I know a lot of people are not going to like this, but Ben Bernanke, quantitative easing, TARP, all these things that a lot of people didn't like have worked. They've worked for the government, and they've worked for the economy. Our economy is light years ahead of the rest of the world. We didn't necessarily have to be there, but there's some good papers came out this week that were commissioned by the Federal Reserve. Admittedly, they were commissioned by the Federal Reserve, that simply said that the actions taken by the Federal Reserve, quantitative easing, had the desired positive effects and are still rippling through the economy to have the desired positive effects. Now, you're going to hear fearmongers. You're going to hear people who are screaming that we're going to have something bad happen. Remember Glenn Beck screaming everything bad was going to happen. Bill Gross at the bottom of the market
screaming. He's still saying it now.
And so ignore those voices. The economy has done well. We've got some really, really good professionals leading it. if Congress, the House of Representatives, I noticed a bill, or in the Senate, a bill was introduced to for the Congress basically to take over the Federal Reserve. Boy.
Yeah. Well, that was a Rand Paul.
Yes, that would be an utter disaster.
Let me approach that from a different direction. Politics, getting involved with the economy, is a bad idea. That's what's going on in Russia. Politics and the economy do not mix. TARP and the actions taking place in on an emergency basis, I don't like that they had to happen. I much prefer giving better regulation to Too Big to Fail way back before it happened. But since it did happen, TARP was a good band-aid to begin the process. If we take the United States Congress and put them in charge of the Federal Reserve, we will have absolute disaster. They can't decide on their own budget. They can't decide in a short period of time with how they can compromise with each other on almost anything. We just talked about sequestration just a moment ago. That's just, it's insanity. What the Congress is not effective at managing. Congress sometimes is effective at regulating. Most of the time it just regulates. It doesn't mean it's effective at it. If we have the United States Congress auditing the Federal Reserve, first you have to understand what the Federal Reserve is. It's a conglomerate of banks, and there are special rules that the Federal Reserve must follow. If it makes a profit at the Federal Reserve level, the top level, that profit from changing interest rates or from
buying bonds, selling bonds,
that either goes on the books of the Federal Reserve to only be used later for, again, taking care of deflation rather than inflation, or it goes directly back to the United States Congress to use in their budget.
Well, actually, to the Treasury.
To the Treasury. And the Treasury gets to use it the way Congress told Treasury use money right. for this. So some of those extraordinary measures that the Treasury Department used to keep the budget from going defunct when funding got cut off by Congress was based on revenue coming in from profits made by the Federal Reserve in buying back all this stuff with quantitative easing. They've made profits on it. If this were Warren Buffett doing it, we would look around and say, man, he's brilliant. But because it was the Federal Reserve, we look at it and say, okay, they did their job. So they get blamed when they do their job and nobody knows the results, but they don't get the credit when they do their job and the results are good. Mm-hmm. So that's what we're saying here. If the Congress of the United States gets involved in whether or not to raise interest rates or lower interest rates, back in 2007, you and I went to a conference in Florida, and I enjoyed that conference quite a lot. Alan Greenspan spoke at that conference, and Alan Greenspan talked about losing the election for George H.W. Bush. He didn't do it on purpose. George H.W. Bush came to him and said, we can't raise interest rates right now. Alan Greenspan said, I can't look at the presidential election or the congressional election to say whether or not I should raise interest rates. I have to do it based on the economy. He raised interest rates. Bill Clinton's It's the Economy, Stupid comes in. Alan Greenspan intentionally put us into a recession, not for political purposes, but because we needed a recession. And that's one of those things that's really hard to understand. Why would you possibly need a recession? Because we have to clear out the deadwood. We have to get rid of the stuff that isn't functioning. The whole idea behind Too Big to Fail is because they have not failed. We need some element of competition in the market, in the economy. And if those decisions are being made for political purposes, we lose the effectiveness of it. Then we get exactly what Rand Paul is terrified of, which is people in dark rooms running the economy based on their own wishes for their own outcome. Look at Ben Bernanke's life right now. He's not making it huge. He's not a lobbyist. If you look, he's back teaching college. If you look at what happens to a senator when they're no longer in office, they're making large amounts of money dealing with other senators and lobbying. The Federal Reserve needs to be kept a non-political organization, the same way the Supreme Court is. I realize the appointments of the Supreme Court, that people say this is a Republican appointment or a Democrat appointment, and then they get surprised because the Supreme Court rules with their conscience and rules with the Constitution rather than rules with the political agenda. We need it. It's a check and balance.
And you are listening to the Personal Wealth Coach. Telephone numbers in here are 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400.
One of the we continue to face a serious issue in the world, particularly in Europe, but to a lesser extent in the United States, and that's deflation. We seem to be climbing out of it. They don't. A lot of people were concerned a few years ago about inflation. There is still no sign of inflation. The matter of fact, the inflation, what's called the consumer purchase index, which is a different,
not the consumer price index,
right,
even though it has the same acronym.
Consumer purchase cost index is actually what it's called. In other words, the looking at money that you as a consumer actually spend, and taking the average across the United States, actually was up only 0.07%. I think it was. Over a 12-month period, but it's beginning to creep back up again now. But the point is that in Europe, it's pretty clear at this point that large sections of Europe are in deflation, where they're expecting prices to go down. We're not too far from it here. There's a lot of importance in recognizing that that may not be true. There's a lot of things that are going on out there that would be better if we had a little more inflation. But one of the keys, the reason I'm bringing this up, is the Federal Reserve may not raise interest rates in June. And the reason they may not raise interest rates in June is quite literally the inflation rate in the United States has now been missed longer. The desired inflation rate that the Fed sets as an objective has missed longer than they've ever had before in history, and it's being missed on the downside. So, like Jake said, that's one of those things that could cause a hiccup in the market. The hiccup could be that the Federal Reserve raises rates a little bit and the market starts back down because the economy starts back down. Again, that's easily fixed and can be turned around very quickly. But it's one of those threats. It's one of the things to kind of be aware of. The market is fairly priced at this point. The major stock indices at least are. And so what we're going to see going forward is growth in the economy driving the market and not a recovery. That's a very, very different world to live in. And we enter into that time period now when it's probably good to be a little more cautious and to not want to see double-digit returns, even if the market does turn in double-digit returns. By the way, another thing. You probably noticed that Radio Shack declared bankruptcy.
Yes.
Chapter 11 bankruptcy for Radio Shack, which the only thing that's shocking about that to me is how long it took to arrive and why the heck Cerberus, the hedge fund, was doing loaning them $100 million to run a broken economic model.
I'm thinking maybe they thought they could eke some interest payments back before the collapse. I don't know.
But the point is that they just have too many people per square foot of stuff being sold, and the stuff they're selling, it's a combination of toy store and somebody who wants to solder resistors onto a circuit board, and I think we're not doing that a lot anymore.
You can go online for the toys, and you can go online for the resistors. I actually do quite a bit of little odds and ends in the electrical world and soldering them onto a board. I found that by going to Radio Shack, I wind up spending twice as much, and I get the wrong parts. Or if I go online, I can get lots of definition of what I'm buying, and the price is a lot less. A lot less.
There's another point of interest that came up is in the Wall Street Journal today, in their weekend journal, there's a fascinating little article about military retirements.
Oh, boy.
And apparently, the article points out that the military retirement system in the United States has not changed substantially since 1947.
Yeah.
Whereas Other nations around the world have raised their retirement age to 50 and 55. A person who, an enlisted person who goes in the military at 17 can retire at 37. The average, this was fascinating, I didn't realize these averages here. The average officer, and about half of the officers who enter stay on active duty for 20 years now,
yeah,
is retiring at age 42 and getting a pension that will last the rest of his or her life, to the point where, and this was in 2012, the last data that they could come up with, the unfunded pension liability at the, and in 2012,
so this is
for the military,
3 years ago,
okay, is $1 trillion. Actually, $924 billion, but that's close enough.
What that means is that over the time period expected, they're going to be paying out $1 trillion. That's above what we're receiving from...
And this is $1 trillion part of our debt.
Yeah.
And those of you who are here and you're on military retirements, we've been saying this for years. It's starting. We're starting to see the echoes rise up.
Yeah. What it means is that don't spend it all.
Yeah, it's,
put it, sock it away, and we're, people hear us talk about this, and they say, you guys are for cutting military retirement. No, clear your ears a minute. We're not for that. You were promised this. However, when Congress makes their decisions over who gets paid, and in a few years they're deciding whether or not to pay Social Security.
And that's coming fairly quickly.
Or Medicare. And instead pay a 42-year-old man or woman who has a six-figure salary at another organization, they're probably going to look at that and they're going to say, we're going to either change the amount of retirement that you get or when you get it. So I realize that we're the bearers of bad news here. Don't shoot the messenger. We're saying this because we're looking ahead and saying, for our clients, what are the dangers? If we didn't do that, we wouldn't be doing our job. And we're saying that for a group of people in Central Texas, there are a lot of retirees here from the military.
And there's just I don't know what Congress is going to do about this down the road. But what I can say is that the Social Security system is scheduled to run a deficit, according to the Congressional Budget Office, in 2029. The military retirement system already is in deficit, but by about that time, presuming we don't get a buildup in the military, and I think we will get a buildup military, the military retirement system will require as much expenditure as the whole Defense Department does now.
Yeah.
Now, those two things are going to come up at about the same time. It's not like you can say, well, it's a political issue. It isn't a political issue. Because
it's a monetary
issue. It's going to happen. The issue is, what are you going to do about it? And if you're spending your military retirement prior to age 62...
One of the things that... One simple thing to do is don't spend it all. Next thing to do is elect congressmen who have served in the military.
That might help a lot, too.
Because there are not very many of them
right
now.
And we have a caller on 773-1400. You're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
I have a kind of unrelated question. I know a couple of weeks ago, I think it was Jake said that he was growing mushrooms with cardboard, and I was just curious if there was a mycology society here in Central Texas, and if so, if you could put me kind of in touch. Or
I don't know of a society. There's a place, I think it's in North Carolina, called Mushroom Mountain, and it's run by a mycologist. There's quite a few good TED Talks on mycology. Just look for mushrooms on the TED Talk. I have a huge book that my wife gave me on it, and there's some really cool stuff being discovered on the health benefits of mushrooms. That's not what we do, but it's really effective in a lot of ways.
There would be an effective profession.
Mycology.
So somebody comes up to you and say, "And said, what are you?" And says, "I'm a mycologist."
Oh, mycologist.
Yes, pretty cool. I mean,
yeah. So I recognize that my
your ecology.
It is a hobby of mine, and basically, what I like to do with shredded paper rather than just throw it out is seed it with oyster mushroom spore or spawn, and soak it down, and you know. then I grow oyster mushrooms out of it, and I can eat my shredded paper. All those credit card offers that I don't reply to get shredded, and I eat them.
Wow. Okay. Thanks for calling.
Thank you.
Thanks for the call.
That is...
I wish that... There may be a mycology group in Austin. I know at a lot of the farmers markets, there are people that show up and sell the kits, but I don't know if that's the same kind of society. It sounds like they're kind of more for-profit, filthy lucre.
In,
shameful capitalist society.
By the way, I do think on a more economic basis, back to economics again, I do think, by the way, we are finally, this run-up in interest rates that we're seeing right now, which isn't much of one, I think is probably the prelude, finally, to where we see interest rates return more to normal historic levels. And that means that... if for no other reason, because I was tempted so much last week, bonds are getting pretty dangerous at
this
point.
Yeah, bonds are definitely in the red zone at this point.
And let's see, what else? We got anything else on here of any significance? Social Security.
We hit Social Security. We've hit all the major numbers. Basically, I feel bad about hitting the retirement for the military without giving some more time to talk about this.
Well, It's just a matter of economics. By the way, 1974, the actuaries predicted this.
Right. All you have to do, if you're a retired military person or you are in the active duty now, if you treat your retirement the same way you treat any other mission that was supposed to be given to you, and you say, all right, here are the resources available, here is the goal that we're going to accomplish, how am I going to do it? It'd be nice if you could get a mission and they say, here are the resources that you have available, and you say, no, I want more, and they give you more. But that's not the way reality works very often. The resources that you have are the stuff that you've been promised, but you were promised by Congress. You were promised by an act of Congress, and all it takes is an act of Congress to revoke that promise. It's happened before. It happened at the turn of the 20th century. It's happened multiple times before that. The United States is obligated by the Constitution to pay its bonds. Your debts are an act of Congress that can be changed. You are an IOU holder from the United States Congress. So
it's
do something about it.
And get the wrong number. Congressional Budget Office says 2025 is when Social Security will start to run a major deficit.
That's 10 years. That's not very far.
Right, that's 10 years from now. And it's about the same time that the military retirement system goes
belly up
to the point where it's not fundable.
So when the choice is between a 70-year-old lady who doesn't have an income and a 43-year-old retired officer that's working somewhere else, I'm not saying it's a good choice, but that's the choice that they're going to have to make.
And we're going to have to make, and, you know, the article, by the way, in the Wall Street Journal, Jen McTague, very, very good article where he points out that Obama's budget does not address this, which means whoever we elect next is going to get the opportunity to either fix the Social Security and the military retirement program,
or we're going to have a little bit of issues in there.
Or we'll have a major crisis facing us down the road. Again,
we're out of time, though.
It's World War One time.
If you would like to contact us off the air, this weekend we have voicemail waiting. During the week, it is live person locally at
947-1111.
You can also reach that number toll-free at 1-800-914-7526. That's 800-914-PLAN. You can reach us by email at jeff@tpwc.com or jake@tpwc.com. You can go to our webpage, thepersonalwealthcoach.com or tpwc.com. We've got podcasts, we've got reading material, we've got ugly mugs. Come and see us. And
until next week,
this has been the Personal Wealth Coach.
Fair, balanced. Your Fox News radio station in Central Texas.